and pinned to the ground. Mendoza, Tharp, and Lawson were holding me down like I was a rabid animal. I didn't fight, just lay there, catching my breath, trying to get out of the dark water and back to the world, back to Karina. Where was she? It had been a while since I'd had this kind of loss of control and succumbed to the volcano inside of me, but I couldn't find it in me to feel bad or to feel anything, really. I had kept it dormant long enough, and now that it had erupted, I was numb. The sound of sirens rang through the air, and I could barely recognize Karina as my eyes met hers. She was standing above me as they let me sit up, looking at me like I was someone she had never met. Her face disappeared as I tried to hold on to the memory of it, of her. But the past took over the present.
Chapter 13. Karina. I had never driven drunk in my life. I wasn't sure if I was even still buzzed after the insanity, but I had spent my whole life proudly never, ever drinking and driving. But there I was, opening the driver's side door of Kale's massive truck. I hadn't even started the engine yet, but was already so anxious. I was hoping that Kale would come back to me, to this realm of reality. It sucked, sure as hell, but I didn't want to face it alone, and I didn't know what to do with the man standing at the passenger side. I waited for Kale to open the door before I started the truck. When the door didn't open, I climbed back out and walked around to him. He stood there, still as stone, eyes nearly as dark as the sky. It was so quiet, even as everyone scrambled before the MPs could arrive. We needed to go, and fast. I had already witnessed what could happen if the MPs and Kale crossed paths again, and this time I knew it would be much, much worse. His wide chest moved up and down in waves, his facial features not moving at all. Wet dots of blood on his cheek reflected the moonlight. A thick chill ran over me, and my fight-or-flight instinct kicked in, but I forced it down, needing to put Kale first. Kale, I quietly said his name. Kale, we need to go. I stood in front of him, leaning up on my tippy toes so my eyes would meet his. He was still blank, no one and nothing in his eyes. He blinked, confusion blurring his features.
Who are you?
He asked me. I lost my breath. I had never dealt firsthand with someone in the middle of an episode of PTSD. I had heard many of stories from my clients, but this was entirely different. I loved Kale, and he was lost. I didn't know where to go or what to say to find him. My heart had never been so broken. Martin. I cleared my throat. His attention snapped to me. Martin, I repeated as a tiny, tiny bit of life came back to him. Sergeant, we need to evacuate immediately. I had no fucking idea what I was saying, but it worked. Something clicked inside of him, and he moved so quickly to get into the passenger seat that he nearly knocked me over. The sirens wailed through the air as I rushed to the driver's side and turned the key. Kale's seatbelt was already on, and his eyes were tracking inside of the vehicle and out the windshield in quick little movements. I couldn't comprehend what was happening inside of him, but I knew I had to get him out of there. I'm going to drive now, I said, in the most neutral, flat, soldier-like voice I could manage.
Got it.
I drove away from the Mendoza's house and got off the post as fast as I possibly could. The heat of my own uncontrollable tears covered my face and flowed down my neck. Not wanting to make any sudden movements, I let them fall. I left the radio off, and time dragged and dragged, making it feel like it took an hour to get to my house. I parked in the driveway, even though Kale usually left his truck on the street. Bradley, my neighbor, was walking into his house, so I waved and waited for him to go in, hoping he wouldn't be able to see the difference in Kale from a distance. The last thing I needed was Bradley, or anyone, getting involved and escalating the situation. Fear coursed through me as I prepared to look over at Kale and speak to him, Martin? I spread my voice like butter, trying not to alarm him. His brows drew down his forehead, eyes confused and lips frowning.
Martin?
Was Cale back? If so, was he aware that he had blanked out? My hands were slightly shaking, my heart pounding as I turned my body to him. Cale?
Yeah?
He responded as if nothing had happened, as if I had asked him if he wanted pizza for dinner. We're home, I told him, looking at my yard and house. The porch light was on, and the materials for the deck were all over the place. His eyes met mine, and he studied me. I could feel him assessing me. I pulled my gaze away first and climbed out of the truck. Cale met me on the driver's side at a pace that made me jump. He stood in front of me, his body towering over mine, his jaw ticking as if he had a million things to say, but the words were caught, unable to escape. I reached my hand out, unsure what would happen. Before my fingertips touched him, he fell to his knees in front of me, sobs violently overtaking his body. He pressed his head against my torso, and his muffled scream shook my body. We stayed like that until he was dry of tears. I rubbed his head, telling him it would be okay, that everything would be okay. I knew I was lying, but I repeated it anyway. Where did you go? I asked Cale, as I turned the cold water for the bathroom sink on and let it run over his hands. He didn't so much as flinch as the water touched his open wounds. He was seated on the closed toilet seat, and I stood over him.
What do you mean?
He asked, his voice low, eyes not meeting mine. You know what I mean, I tactfully responded. I wasn't intending on opening his emotional wounds after what he had just gone through, but I couldn't pretend like nothing had happened. His soul had disappeared in front of my own eyes. A chill ran over my entire body as I recalled the uncontrollable difference in him and the release of it on my lawn. Of course I knew he would never lay a finger on me, or anyone except a lunatic holding a gun. But deep down, I wasn't sure if I believed that after what had happened less than an hour ago. My hand shook as I poured peroxide over his skin and dabbed it with a clean towel. His skin was ripped, and I took a pair of nail clippers from the drawer and disinfected them before cutting the dangling skin. I went to press a bandage gently over the wounds, and Cale reached for my hands, clasping them in his.
Are you afraid of me right now? Is that why you're shaking like that?
His voice was so low, and misery and shame filled his eyes. My heart sank. The pain was nearly indescribable.
No?
I tried to even out my voice.
Yeah, you are.
He let go of my hands and dropped his head. My eyes burned as I attempted to stop tears from pouring out.
I'm not.
Tonight was terrifying. He had a gun, an actual gun, and I was so scared you were going to kill him. My shoulders shuddered, and my entire body reacted. As I said it, I realized how big of a deal it was, how badly things could have gone, and a million scenarios ran through my mind, from bad to worse, to bodies lying on the ground, mine included. It was suddenly freezing in the bathroom. I could barely hold myself up, and I held on to the edge of my sink. When I looked into the mirror, my lips were purple and my skin was pale. Cale stood up, and I didn't move. I couldn't. He turned the shower on, and the steam filled the small, poorly ventilated bathroom.
Can I?
He lifted his battered hands toward me. I nodded, words not coming. He reached for the bottom of my dress and lifted it up over my head. I felt like I was in a plastic bubble, not quite touching reality, but still aware of what was going on. He kneeled in front of me and pulled my leg warmers off, one by one. I put my hands on his shoulders to steady myself, and he turned his face up to look at me.
"You're freezing. Get in the shower," he instructed.
His voice softened as he added,
"Please."
I followed his lead and held onto his hand as I stepped over the tub's edge to stand under the warm water. As the drops hit my bare skin, they burned because of how cold I was. But after a minute or so, my body warmed up. My shoulders finally stopped shaking, and my breath was coming out more evenly as I closed my eyes and let the water attempt to wash away the traumatic experience we'd just had. I had no idea how much time had passed, but the air was so thick with steam when I opened my eyes that I could barely see the curtain. I pulled it back and saw the outline of Kale's silhouette leaning against the wall, his head lifted and resting against it. "Kale," I said, reaching my arm out of the curtain and toward him. He turned his head quickly, stepping toward me, foggy steam swirling around him. "Come in," I asked, needing to be close to him. Now that a little bit of the shock had worn off, I desperately wanted him to be close to me. Silently, he undressed and stepped into the shower. He stood behind me, still not saying a word. I turned around to face him and cupped his face. His eyes dropped closed, and I brushed my fingers over his skin. I felt guilty for making him feel like a monster, but I didn't know how to say that without taking away from the seriousness of what had gone down. On top of that, there was the Elodie and Austin situation. Were they okay? I reminded myself there was nothing to be done about them in this moment, so I allowed myself to have a moment of peace with Kale. We both needed it.
"Turn around,"
he said, eyes still closed. My heart sank. "Kale, I'm not..." I began to explain myself, but he interrupted me.
"I'm going to wash your hair,"
he said, and leaned down to grab my shampoo from the edge of the bath. I turned around and put my face in the water. His hands clumsily rubbed my scalp, but after a few seconds, it became more natural. The smell of my shampoo filled my senses. The scent of the lather was incredibly relaxing. Circling my neck, I let my shoulders relax into the sensation. All the worries of the night washed away, rolling down my wet, warm skin as he unhooked the shower head and rinsed the suds from my strands. It felt so, so good. His hands moved my soaking hair to the front of my shoulder, and he massaged my neck. As a licensed therapist, I was surprised how good he was, hitting all the right pressure points and pressing and kneading exactly where I needed relief.
"Thank you. That feels so good," I said, as the water rushed over my face.
Kale's hands moved down to my shoulders, and he continued to show me a deep level of intimacy that I couldn't have fathomed had existed before knowing him. It wasn't the first time he'd done this, but it still felt so new to me. Was this our new thing? How would I ever be able to bathe or shower alone after being so pampered by him?
"My pleasure,"
Kale said, pressing his lips against the spot between my shoulder blades. I hesitated to say it, but he knew how religious I was about my shower routine.
"Can you do the conditioner too? Otherwise my hair will be a tangly mess. I can also do it myself. I appreciate you even..."
From behind me, his hand clasped my mouth before I could finish. I laughed against it, and he grabbed the conditioner bottle, reading the label to make sure it was the right one. Once it was rinsed out, he ran the loofah filled with body wash across my entire body. I held onto his shoulders as he washed my thighs, my calves, and even my feet. I felt like crying again. I really needed to get a handle on my emotions, but tonight had just been too much. Once he was finished, he tried to hand me a towel from the rack outside the shower curtain, but I pulled at his hand, taking the towel gently and tossing it onto the floor.
Confusion filled his face, and I waved my finger for him to switch spots with me. "It's your turn," I said, kissing him softly on his bare chest. He didn't say anything or try to refuse. He just moved around me to stand under the water, and I squeezed the body wash onto the loofah and rubbed it across his wide chest, down and under each arm. He was surprisingly ticklish and kept moving, which made both of us laugh. The trauma of the evening felt like it had happened a month ago. I bent down on my knees to wash Kale's legs and he jerked back, hitting his head on the metal part of my shower head. "What happened?" I looked up, my heart racing.
I don't want you to touch my leg, or even see it.
Huh? What are you talking about? I've seen your legs 100 times, I told him, looking at the bottoms of his legs in front of me. What in the...
See,
he groaned, not looking at me. I raced through all the times we had been undressed in front of one another, all of the time we spent in bed, all of the massages, and it all clicked in my head. This was why he always hid himself. I can't see anything. I closed my eyes. Now let me wash you. It's only fair since you did me. My heart raced, aching and ripping apart all at once. The burned skin, the healed but still inflamed skin, the idea of him suffering nearly made me sick on the spot. But I refused to show him that. I refused to make him feel like he had anything to be ashamed of, like every part of him wasn't absolutely, unquestionably exquisite. I knew he had an injury, but he kept it shielded from me. So I guess my mind had filed it away, and I hadn't thought much about the appearance of it. I didn't care how it looked. I only cared if he was in pain. And I wanted to kill whoever had done this to him. As I swirled the bubbly soap around his skin and down to his feet, I remembered back to our first meeting. That fateful massage when he wore sweatpants and I just thought he was uncomfortable, to the party at my dad's, and how he was about to reveal that part of himself to me, but we were interrupted. "You have nothing to be ashamed of. Not with me." I looked up at him and his eyes were blazing, intense yet careful, as he watched me. I leaned in a bit and kissed his scarred skin, making him gasp, and stood back up to face him. "You're perfect," I assured him, meaning it to my core.
Chapter 14, Kale. When we woke up in the morning, I had 4 missed calls from Phillips. Assuming he hadn't been arrested, I wondered what the fuck had happened to him, or where he'd slept. No matter how hard I tried to recall, I couldn't remember leaving Mendoza's last night. I remembered glimpses of the fight, of the gun, of my memories taking me back to deployment, the way Karina had looked at me, like I terrified her. But I blanked on the end of the party. Next thing I knew, I was in Karina's bathroom with her and now in her bedroom, her body wrapped around me, hugging me from the side. "Humph," she murmured in her sleep, a noise that usually meant she'd wake up soon. Without moving her an inch, I carefully reached for my phone on the nightstand and texted Fisher, making sure he and Elodie had gotten home safely. After a few minutes, he responded. "We're in the living room. Elodie is still asleep. How's my sister?" "She was really shaken up, but she's okay." I sent it, then typed, "I think." "Elodie, too. She was really fucked up after what happened." "Did Phillips get picked up by the MPs?" "No, they never came." I didn't know if I was relieved or pissed. The MPs were usually slap happy to come enforce the little bit of power they held over the rest of us, but I guess it was Phillips's lucky night. I put my phone down as Karina stirred awake. Her eyelids were swollen as she blinked them open, her bloodshot eyes full of lingering anxiety as I watched her come to. "Where's my brother?" she asked, voice strained. "I had a dream that he..." She didn't finish the sentence, but she didn't need to. My phone buzzed next to me. I gently picked it up with the hand that wasn't brushing Karina's cheek. I lifted it behind her head and read the message. The MPs are here, banging on the door. What? What do you mean the MPs are there? At my house? The texting bubbles popped up and I held my breath. They disappeared before a message came through. Fuck. Everything okay? Karina tilted her chin to look into my eyes. I considered lying, but what good would that do? And by now I'd learned my lesson when it came to keeping the truth from such an aware woman as Karina. Not sure. Fisher said the MPs are at my place. She sat up and reached for my phone. Her eyes scanned the screen, reading the text between her brother and me. She wasted no time calling him. Her eyes closed when his voicemail came on. We should go. She climbed off the bed, flung open her dresser drawers, and began tossing clothes onto the floor. The level of panic she felt was contagious. I tried Fisher again while picking up the clothes she was flinging around and putting them on her bed. After pulling a sweatshirt over her head, she hobbled on one leg, then the other, and slid socks onto each of her feet. I got dressed as fast as I could, and Karina called for Elodie. Babe, she's at my place. Her keychain shook in her hand.
Oh, God. Yeah, I forgot.
I'm driving. I gently cupped her hands and removed the keys. No way in hell was I going to let her drive. It seemed to take a fucking lifetime to get to my place, even though it was only a few miles. When we pulled up, the place looked vacated. Elodie's car was gone, and the front door was closed but not locked. We searched the duplex, calling Fisher's and Elodie's names, but no one replied. The kitchen and bathroom lights were on, and there was a fresh glass of ice water on the coffee table. It seemed as if they had left unexpectedly, and given the MPs coming, it made sense. Fisher needed to stay off their radar, or his enlistment would be totally fucked. As it was, he'd already gotten in trouble too many times. Karina called Elodie over and over, but she didn't pick up on her cell either.
I shouldn't have gotten so drunk last night, Karina groaned as we got back into my truck.
There's nothing you could have done, and we don't know why they came. Maybe they were looking for Phillips. I tried to comfort her, but my gut told me something was wrong, beyond the obvious of the shit show that last night had been.
Hopefully, but I need to see my brother.
Her lips quivered as she spoke. I put the truck in drive and headed to the closest MP station. My busted knuckles gripped the steering wheel until they turned white. After two stops, we finally found Elodie's car parked outside the third station. Karina got out of the truck before I turned the ignition off. When we got inside, soldiers and ACUs were sitting behind their desks and two of them were standing, arms crossed, in front of a hysterical Elodie.
You're not listening,
she cried, covering her face with her hands. Karina moved next to her and flung her arms around her as I approached the soldiers. What's going on, Private? I asked the one with the clipboard in his hands. He eyed me up and down before responding.
What's your name, soldier?
The young private asked me. The other one tapped his shoulder and said something in his ear. Having been in combat had given me the ability to easily read lips. As he whispered my name, they both looked at me.
Sergeant Martin, right?
The private with the clipboard asked me. I nodded, my skin prickling.
You need to come with us.
Karina immediately began to panic.
What are you talking about? Why would he?
I held my hand up between her and the soldiers. I didn't want her temper to get her in trouble when these boys were so fucking obviously eager for escalation. I could tell by the way the shorter one had a fucking smug smirk drawn across his rat-like face. I could sense an instigator from a damn mile away. The patches on their ACUs let me know they had never been in combat, so of course they were thirsty for action and for blood. You two should go home, I calmly told Elodie and Karina. I knew damned well that my girl wasn't going to listen, but I hoped her friend would convince her.
No fucking way am I leaving. What do you need to talk to him about? And where is my brother?
Karina's voice traveled through the quiet station.
They arrested him,
Elodie sobbed.
Arrested him for what?
Karina shouted. One of the MPs stepped toward her and every bit of my self-control flew out of the tiny station. I blocked him from getting so much as an inch closer. Give me some info. What grounds did you arrest him on? What are the charges, if any, that have been filed? Why hasn't he been able to call his next of kin yet? The two of them squirmed where they stood, looking at one another for guidance, then to the clock.
We brought him in for complaints of assault. We need to drug test him before we even start the discussion of release.
Drug test him? He's not a soldier yet. You have zero authority to piss test him.
Who's your commander? He's almost here. You need to wait. Sergeant or not, you're not our boss.
I held my breath, taming the growing fire inside of me. Karina and Elodie's stress felt like it was blasting off them and through me. It was so hard to not react to the smug assholes who, from their point of view, were just doing their jobs. But arresting Fisher didn't make any sense. He hadn't done a damn thing. The tiny bit of rational thought I had kept me quiet.
Dad, what's going on?
Karina rushed toward her father as he strode into the room where we all waited. He was wearing his ACUs and boots. I couldn't remember the last time I'd seen that man in his uniform outside the Middle East.
They said Austin's been detained but wouldn't tell us why. Her voice was frantic,
but her father's face stayed as still as stone.
Calm down, Karina, he said.
Elodie's shoulders shook with a sob. She was wearing the same clothes as last night.
You too.
Her dad pointed at the two soldiers and wagged his finger for them to follow him.
With me.
Dad!
Karina shrieked, but was ignored. I went to her, whispering for her to try to calm down a little. I hated that her feelings were valid, but if she continued to show emotion, whatever the hell was going on was only going to get worse. The two soldiers and Lieutenant Fisher huddled for a minute or two before Karina's father approached us.
Your brother will be fine. We got a report that he was high, so once we drug test him, he will be free to go. That is,
he eyed Elodie, then me, then his daughter. There was a tiny flicker of menace in his gaze, more so than the usual asshole he was.
If he passes.
But he's not in the army. How can they arrest him on post? And why are you here? He didn't do anything. If anyone should be arrested, it's Phillips. He had a gun, Dad.
Lieutenant Fisher held his hand up to stop Karina from continuing.
Enough. You keep getting yourself involved in situations that you shouldn't. We also got a report of an assault.
His beady eyes honed in on my busted hands. I tucked them into the pockets of my sweats and kept my expression flat.
But fortunately, the victim doesn't want to press charges.
He kept his eyes on me.
So I suggest you take my daughter home and keep her there. I will deal with my son how I see fit.
Sir?
Elodie finally spoke. Instinctually, I tried to shield her from getting close to Karina's dad.
He?
Karina had told me her father was fond of Elodie, but the way he was looking at her told me otherwise.
Austin doesn't do drugs, and he barely drinks anymore. He's trying really hard to do right in his service,
Elodie explained to him, her hands at her chest like a prayer.
Martin?
He didn't acknowledge her and spoke directly to me.
Take them home.
In my head, I told him to fuck off, to for once in his pathetic life give his daughter the attention and love she needed, to stop being such a fuckhead to his son who was trying to do his best. In reality, I did exactly as I was told. It's best if we go. I put my arm around Karina and watched as her father's eyes burned a hole in me. I know you don't want to, and I'm sorry for pushing this, but I lowered my voice. You know your dad better than anyone. And the best thing we can do is go home.
I can't,
Elodie shook her head.
This is because of me, I know it.
Unless you want to trade places with him?
Lieutenant Fisher threatened me as I tried to coerce the girls to leave with me.
Are you threatening him right now? Seriously?
Karina snapped at her father. I gently gripped her tighter and watched the resolve slowly wash over her. The look on his face told me that he had a lot to say. But he kept his thin lips in a harsh line.
I fucking hate him,
she told me as she held Elodie's hand, leading her out of the building.
God, I fucking hate him.
Since she was in no position to drive, Elodie left her car parked in the lot of the MP station, and I drove the two of them back to Karina's house. When we pulled up, Elodie and Karina were speaking so rapidly that I zoned out while we walked up the grass onto the porch, and I unlocked the door leading them inside. They sat down on the couch, instantly embracing each other, and Karina called off of work for the day. Elodie was already scheduled to be off, but Karina explained to Molly that she was dealing with a family emergency. I didn't want to urge Karina to work while all of this was going on, but I did worry about her cutting her hours because of how tight she mentioned money had been lately. I knew better than to offer to help her, but damn, I wanted to. There was no way in hell she would take my money or even borrow it, and I wanted to keep my body parts intact, so I kept my mouth shut whenever she groaned at her electric or water bill. The struggle between respecting her independence and wanting to make her life easier wasn't an easy one. In fact, I fucking hated it. Maybe I could accidentally drop a couple $100 in her purse and play dumb when she found it, or leave it in an old purse of hers in the closet and hope she came across it. If she wasn't so in tune with me and the expressions I make when trying to lie, I would. To give Karina and Elodie a little bit of privacy, I moved to the kitchen and pulled out my phone. I texted Mendoza to see if he knew what the hell had happened. My finger hovered over Phillips's name, contemplating whether it would make shit worse if I called him. The scabs on my knuckles were raw and dry, and as my mind traveled back to last night, I could taste the faint metal of Phillips's blood as it splattered across my face and mouth. I licked my lips and dropped my phone onto the counter. While I waited for Mendoza to reply, I opened Karina's fridge to see what I could throw together to feed them. She had to be hungover as hell and in need of some damn food, and Elodie was pregnant. She needed to keep her strength up. Karina didn't have much. Some green bell peppers, half an onion, some ground beef. I opened her small pantry and got out a box of instant rice, and thank God she had some seasonings outside of salt and pepper. As the beef browned and sizzled with the onions in the pan, I poured in a carton of chicken stock and checked my phone again. 2 missed calls from Mendoza. I tried him back and he picked up on the first ring.
What the fuck is going on, man?
He asked. I glanced into the living room, turned the element down on the stovetop, and stepped toward the back door to shield at least some of my voice from the girls. I don't fucking know. Fisher is being held at the MP station on Wold Avenue. They picked him up from my place this morning, but no one will tell me a fucking thing. And Lieutenant Fisher showed up there. Fisher's not even at basic yet. Something's up. And Phillips is at the center of it. That much is clear.
Did he stay with you?
I asked. Nah. I don't know when he left or with who. Shit went crazy and everyone left before the police got there. I don't know where his ass slithered off to. You haven't heard from him?
Not a fucking word.
Mendoza let out a sigh.
Maybe he's dead and we can all go back to our regularly scheduled programming.
I laughed, kind of wishing it was true.
But for real, what are we going to do about Fisher? We can't just leave him there. Did a shitbag sperm donor say he was going to at least get him out?
If he passes a drug test. My response came out more unsure than I meant it to.
He will. I mean it, bro. He's been clean as a goddamn whistle lately. No way in hell he's failing a drug test right now.
You're sure? I hated to doubt Fisher, but I wasn't a fucking idiot, and I had seen him higher than a cloud on many occasions.
Yup, positive. The last time he smoked was weeks ago. Since he's become all domestic with Elodie, he's gotten his shit together. I wouldn't be surprised if his old man tries to rig it, though.
The test? I asked, knowing exactly what Mendoza meant, but not wanting to acknowledge that as a possibility.
Fuck. Let me call my old platoon leader and see if he can get me an update. But we know what their father is capable of.
His deep voice shook on the other line and I swallowed. We both knew that better than anyone, and Mendoza not using his name wasn't lost on me. I put my phone into my pocket and made sure the ringer was on while I finished making something that resembled dirty rice. I filled 2 bowls all the way to the top and shoved a spoon into each. My appetite was nowhere to be found, but it smelled good as fuck. I knew Karina's taste buds enough by now to know she would love it, and the look on her face when I handed her the bowl proved me right.
Any update?
Karina asked me as soon as I stepped into the living room. I shook my head. I don't want to hear that you're not hungry. Both of you eat now, I insisted. Please. I added with a fake smile to make my command more of a suggestion, but if they didn't, I would spoon feed the 2 of them myself.
Thank you.
Elodie's voice was quiet, but she pushed a spoonful into her mouth and closed her eyes as she chewed.
I was so hungry but didn't notice.
Karina's eyes were tired, but the way she looked at me made me forget, just for a moment, the massive shit show we were all in the middle of.
Thank you, she mouthed soundlessly and began to eat. My phone rang in my pocket.
I need to take this. I left the room before either of them could question me and stepped out the front door and walked down the porch. It was hard to believe it was barely fucking noon. The sun was just about over the clouds and the air had a bite to it. Karina's nosy-ass neighbor was by his truck dragging a mattress by a rope into the bed of it. What did you find out?
Word is he failed, but I'm telling you he fucking didn't.
What the hell? My mind raced with potential solutions, potential reasons this was happening. Was Karina's father trying to keep his son from leaving for basic training?
What are we gonna do, Martin?
Mendoza asked me. I paused, thinking about Karina and how she would be absolutely thrown deeper into hell if she knew what was happening right now. That her father was not only not helping, but was potentially the cause of all this mess. My phone went off. The noise when someone was calling, and I had to blink to make sure I was reading the name correctly. It was Karina's father. Let me call you right back, I said as Mendoza called my name. Sergeant Martin, I answered in the flattest tone I could manage. My heart was racing and that pissed me off beyond words. This measly little man should have zero power over me, but instead he could play puppeteer with two of the people I care the most about in the world.
Come to the station, Sergeant, he instructed, calling me by my rank for the first time that I could remember. Why? I dropped all formality.
Because my son needs a ride home if they let him go, and you and I need to talk.
A ride home? So we passed the test? Mendoza told me less than 30 seconds ago that he hadn't. So what the actual fuck was going on?
Come to the station, Sergeant, he repeated.
Fuck it. If he wanted to play games with me, then let's fucking play.
Chapter 15. Kale. Karina called me before I even made it to the stop sign. She must have heard my truck rev up and pull away from the curb. I hadn't even told them I was leaving. I'd hung up the call from Karina's dad and walked straight to my truck. If Elodie or Karina had said anything to try to stop me, I hadn't heard them. My mind roiled as I drove myself into a situation that had less than a 1% probability of ending well for me. On the phone, she begged me to turn around, to take her with me, but I pleaded with her, told her to keep herself and Elodie home. There was nothing either of them could do right now, and seeing her distraught would only make me act irrationally. I was so used to calling in backup, to radioing my platoon to come save my ass, but this time, it was just me. Though I had been on death's door many a time, the stakes somehow felt higher in that moment driving away from her house. For the first time in my life, I realized I would genuinely choose another person's well-being over my own. Not in a every soldier has each other's backs kind of way, but in a I would burn this entire post down, I would go against every moral I had, I would do fucked up unspeakable things to anyone and everyone I had ever met for her way. I'll bring your brother home, I said. You keep Elodie calm and don't answer the door for anyone. I mean anyone, in case Phillips shows up there. The thought chilled me to the bone. I would finish what I'd started the night before if he so much as came within 100 feet of Karina.
I don't like it, Kale, she said. You don't have to like it, but listen, please.
She said okay and we hung up. As I pulled into the parking lot, I spotted Lieutenant Fisher standing against his truck with his arms crossed. I parked beside him and climbed out of mine. My leg was still sore from last night, but I'd be damned if I showed any weakness in front of him. I straightened my back and stared directly into his eyes as I approached him.
That was quick, he said, indicating the space behind me.
It's important. He nodded as if that mattered to him.
Come sit in my truck, Martin,
he craned his neck. The blue veins were grayish color under his slightly yellow skin. Does our conversation need to be that private? I asked, knowing my rebellious questioning would piss him off.
Yes. Yes, it does. If you care about my family the way I have the impression you do, then you'll do what I say.
The urge to tell him to fuck right off was strong, but both of us knew I wouldn't do that. He knew as well as I did that I would do exactly what he said, if it meant that Karina and Fisher would be okay. We got into his truck and I couldn't help but scoff at the small photo of Karina and Fisher stuck inside his dashboard near the speedometer.
They looked about 10 in the photo. Karina's hair was to her waist, and she was hanging on to her brother's back. He had a goofy-ass smile on his face, and it gave me the tiniest ounce of peace to know that at some point their home life was decent enough to have caused those smiles.
That photo was taken when the twins were about 11. We were camping outside of Houston.
He handed me the old photograph. It was cut around the left edge, and I realized someone was cut out of it. Their mother.
Funny that you have such sentiment about it. Yet your son is being held without reason and your daughter is losing her mind over it, and you don't seem to give a shit.
All pretense and manners were gone. He didn't deserve my respect. And now that my discharge was right around the corner, there was nothing he could do to stop it.
You know, the one thing I like about you is how decided and direct your opinions are. It's refreshing to have someone speak to me like they're my superior,
he told me, a half smile lifting the right side of his face. I didn't know how to respond to that. I thumbed the picture, looking at the cut edge. Anything else you like about me? Or are we just going to hang out in your truck while your children suffer? He laughed a bit.
Huh, suffer. My children don't have a clue what suffering is.
In a way, he had a point. They'd grown up in a warm house with an officer's income, flat screen TVs, hot meals, clean water. But human suffering came in a magnitude of forms. It wasn't as simple as saying someone hadn't suffered because they'd had necessities. Karina had been so emotionally neglected since her mother left, and that had taken a toll on her. Her father's coldness, along with being abandoned, was suffering. Fisher's attempts at being someone his dad respected while drinking and getting high to take away the pain he wasn't comfortable feeling was fucking suffering. Me watching my mother work herself sick and never having a support system, listening to my sister cry when the kids at her private school, full of upper-middle-class white kids, made comments about her dirty uniform and sneakers, was absolutely fucking suffering. I watched children die in front of me. I've seen a man get his head blown off his fucking body as his wife screamed for help that wasn't coming. If you're too arrogant to consider that your children are going through the pain they're in because of you, I don't have anything to say to you. You and I both know the impossibility of putting a measure on what it means to suffer. We've seen it all, you even more than me. And if you can't separate being a soldier in the middle of war and being a father, you're useless anyway, I told him, not editing my words. I wasn't talking to my lieutenant, I was talking to Karina's father.
Look, I continued, turning my body to fully face him in the passenger seat and sighing.
I don't know why you called me here, but I'm done pretending that I don't hate you. Every breath you take feels unfair and unjust. Stop with the vague bullshit and tell me what you want.
I'd seen this man in the middle of a rocket attack, in a sandy tornado of shells, bullets, and explosions. I'd seen him watch innocent people die. I'd seen him ruin my battle buddy's sanity for the sake of his own reputation. I'd seen him with blood on his hands in every sense of the word. But I had never seen him speechless. He stared at me, and seconds felt like minutes before he finally spoke. Light rain began to tap against the truck, filling the windshield with tiny drops. I watched as they slid into one another, being immediately replaced by another. It felt metaphorical.
I need you to get my daughter out of Fort Benning, he finally said. I cocked my head, not sure if I had heard him correctly.
What?
I need my daughter to leave this post, Martin. There's something bigger going on here, and despite what you think I feel for my children, I'd like them safe. I will do something in return for you. I'll get Mendoza the help he needs. I'll even help him get medically discharged if that's what he wants. I already made sure you got your 90% disability so you can still work when you get to Atlanta. I tried to keep Phillips in Afghanistan as long as I could, but...
My head was spinning from each statement he made. Did he really have something to do with my discharge going so smoothly? Would he try to make up for what he'd done to Mendoza? I asked my last question out loud.
Why would you want to keep Phillips deployed?
He stared at me. The interior of the truck was so humid that the windows were fogging, and he had a bead of sweat above his gray brow.
He's a bloodthirsty fool. You know that.
You know he almost shot your son last night, right? So when you scolded me earlier, you...
He did what?
He had a gun and pointed it at Austin last night. I'd called Fisher by his first name only a handful of times, but this felt like the right time to use it. This seemed to be news to him. Whose idea was it to arrest and drug test Fisher? I asked, my thoughts forming a completely different situation than the one I had pieced together this morning.
I'm trying to find the answer to that question. I did what I could and he'll be free to grow in a few. But they're trying to ruin his chances of enlisting.
Who's they? Of course he wasn't going to tell me. The details didn't really matter anyway. What mattered was that Fisher needed to be careful. We all did.
I've made many, many mistakes in my life, but this time it's pure spite. The less involved you are, the better, but ironically, you're the only one who can help get my kids out of here before anything escalates and my health grows.
I didn't have to hear the end of his sentence to know something was going on with him. Something more than some melodramatic villains from his past trying to sabotage his children's lives. The real reason he was attempting to repent was that he was going to die. I could practically smell it on him, the stench of a rotting man. I should have caught on sooner, but now it was obvious.
Is it cancer or something else? I asked.
He ran his hands along the edge of the steering wheel.
Tar pits. Enough about me. Can you make Karina leave with you? I can make sure Austin gets to basic before Thanksgiving, but Karina will never listen to me, as you know.
He almost smiled, and for the smallest breath, I felt a little pity for him. What a miserable existence. What a wasted legacy. And now it was going to be cut short, leaving his relationship with his kids in limbo, even after his last breath. Karina was not going to be able to handle his death. That was the only thing that made me wish it wasn't coming. I wondered how much time he had, and if anyone else knew.
Why are you telling me all of this? Like I said, you're the only one who can help. Not help me, but help my daughter. She's going to lose her brother to distance and will be left with no one by her side. And you seem determined to stay. So all I'm asking is that you convince her to go to Atlanta with you. And soon.
My head pounded as the rain picked up, mimicking the noise in my mind. I couldn't guarantee that Karina would leave this place, and she 1,000% wouldn't move if she knew her dad was dying. I can't and won't promise you anything, but I'll do what I can. For her, I finally agreed. I needed to get out of the damn truck and have space to process this bizarre conversation. The situation with Fisher, the fact that Phillips was roaming around with a gun. As overwhelming as it all was, as I mentally listed it, I shifted my process to what Sergeant Martin would do, taking the emotion out of it. I needed to come up with a plan that wouldn't make Karina hate me and execute it quickly.
Chapter 16. Karina. What if they keep him there? Elodie asked, her hands clasped on her lap, knuckles white. Her skin was a gray color, under her eyes blue and hollow. It wasn't the time to remind her that stress wasn't good for her baby, but it was so hard not to. They won't. Kale will figure it out, he always does.
This is all my fault. God, how do things keep getting worse, Karina?
I scooted closer to her and wrapped my arms around her shoulders. Her skin was icy to the touch, increasing my anxiety. There wasn't a single thing I could do or say to make sense of any of this, and she was right. Everything kept getting freaking worse, nearly daily at this point. Things always get worse before they get better, Elodie. We will figure it all out. Kale will handle it, and my brother will be fine. And worst case, you can take my brother and run away to France. I smiled, actually wishing that was in the realm of reality. I would miss them like crazy, but each day felt like another bomb would go off. She almost smiled. A second later, my front door opened and Kale, followed by Austin, walked through. Relief washed over me. Elodie jumped up, wrapping her arms around my brother's neck, and finally stopped crying. Are you okay? she asked, placing her palms on either side of his cheeks and moving his head around slowly. He laughed, as only he would, given the circumstances.
I'm fine, I'm fine.
Kale took his shoes off and hesitated by the door for a moment. He didn't make eye contact with me instantly, which he usually did. He had to be exhausted from being dragged into my brother's shit again, but something felt off. I knew him well enough to know he wouldn't exactly be vocal about anything that was wrong. It wasn't the time to ask him, especially not in front of an audience, so I hugged him instead. He bent his knees a little to meet me at my height and pressed his forehead against mine. I nearly melted at the intimacy of it. Until Kale, I'd never realized how starved for physical touch I was. My mother had been affectionate until she wasn't, and my father, I couldn't remember the last time he'd hugged me or so much as touched my arm or brushed my hair away when it covered my eyes. What now? I asked. I didn't breathe as I fired off the questions that had been playing in my head for the last few hours. Are you in trouble? Did you pass or fail the drug test? Can you still be a soldier? Why did they arrest you in the first place? Where is Phillips? Did Dad
care? Oh my God.
Austin rolled his eyes, drooping his shoulders like he was 15 and had gotten caught shoplifting again. Don't care me, Austin. We have been worried to death, and you're acting like nothing happened. We need answers. I looked at Elodie for backup, but with one glance, I could tell her alliance was with my brother.
Let me at least take a shower and eat before you interrogate me, my brother teased. But seriously, everything is okay. It was a mix-up, and I'm not in any trouble, he explained.
I swear, the house could be on fire, and my brother would sit on the couch and play freaking Xbox. Nothing ever seemed to bother him, and aside from Phillips's behavior toward Elodie last night, Austin floated through life without a care in the world.
Must be fucking nice.
I stared a hole into his back, cussing him out mentally as he walked down the hallway and went into the bathroom. The sound of rushing water filled the room, and Elodie turned to Kale. Is he really okay? She asked, her brows scrunched together as she leaned toward him as if she was examining him.
Tout va bien?
He's all right,
Kale said.
Did anyone show up here?
He glanced around the room, doing his usual survey of the place, probably noting that we'd moved the pillows on the couch to the floor, and Elodie had brought a glass of water to the coffee table. He noticed everything.
No. My husband hasn't, and he didn't call, Elodie told him.
Last night felt like a different lifetime. Like it hadn't actually happened to me. To us. It was strange and fascinating the way my brain was processing the anxiety and intrusive thoughts as they came in. Today, even with the chaos of my brother getting arrested and released, it felt like I was split into two versions of myself. One of them was hiding in a corner with a spinning mind and shaking hands, full on fight or flight mode. And the other was standing in my living room, half smiling, thinking about how Kale's eyes looked like honey under my lights. I kept waiting for a massive, soul-splitting breakdown, but even when I thought about the way the string lights in Mendoza's backyard had reflected off the metal gun in Phillips's hand, the memory was both fuzzy and clear, like a film I had seen but didn't remember clearly.
Karina?
Kale's voice sounded like it was underwater as I blinked my eyes to focus.
Uh-huh. Did you hear me?
He asked. No, I did not.
No, sorry. What was it?
I said, I'm going to go to Mendoza's. Do you want to come with me or stay with Elodie and your brother?
I want to go with you. I didn't want to be away from him, not even for a second. We waited for my brother to come out of the bathroom before we left. Kale gave the two of them a brief lecture on not opening my door and calling him immediately if Philip showed up. My brother agreed calmly, but I could practically read his mind, and I knew that if Elodie's husband arrived unexpectedly at my house, all rational thought would fly out the window and one of them wouldn't survive.
The casual bleakness of my thought surprised me. No, it wasn't the thought exactly. It was that it was true. This was what I had always feared when it came to being too embedded in military life and culture. Life and death becoming passive thoughts, a part of the way things were. Would I reach a point where I wouldn't even cry at a funeral like my father? Do you cry at funerals? I asked Kale as soon as he closed the driver's side door of his truck.
No,
he said, checking the rearview mirror before pulling out of my driveway. Huh. Did you used to? I wondered. He shook his head.
Not since I was a kid, my mom's brother died.
He had mentioned his uncle a few times, in the quiet of the night as I poked and prodded for every detail about his life before I knew him. He had died when Kale was a child, and was the only sibling his mother had. Do you cry over other things? Just not death? I asked. He glanced over at me before he responded, probably wondering where the hell I was going with this. His voice was low as he told me,
I cried the first time I killed someone.
My breath caught in my throat at his raw response. Oh. I kept my eyes on him. The idea that he might think I couldn't look at him because of what he'd said made me sick. His eyes met mine as he slowed to a stop at the end of my street. In them, I saw regret, pain. A man who had lived 100 lives before his 21st birthday.
And the second. And the third.
A lifelong sadness filled his words. Did it get easier? He shook his head.
I was told that it would. That the first time was the worst. But even though I only eliminated people who were actively trying to kill me or my platoon, it only got harder. Watching my boys, Phillips for one, becoming too comfortable taking lives was something I wasn't trained for. I was trained to survive, to only kill if I absolutely had to, but I had and still have a constant fear of slipping, of not valuing human life. It's a thin line when you're told that you're doing the right thing. That you're a hero fighting for the safety of your country. The more I questioned, the more I lost my sanity.
People who are insane don't think they're insane. I had no clue how to comfort him and knew deep down that I couldn't. But I needed him to know that he wasn't bad. That he was the most thoughtful, the most level-headed person I had ever known. He wasn't like Phillips or my father.
Right.
He smiled a little, raising his brow.
Any other questions about my emotional capabilities, or can I get on the highway?
I laughed, knowing sarcasm and self-deprecation were how we both handled heavy emotions. Sometimes there was no morally perfect way to navigate things as big and traumatic as war and death and invading countries and taking lives. Highway. But I do have more questions. I reached for his hand. It was so warm in mine, and the ointment slathered over his busted knuckles was still wet and shining under the fall sun. Who was the worst teacher you've ever had? I asked him as he sped up. The engine roared, and he began to tell me about the awful math teacher he had in the 10th grade. Gloria greeted us as we pulled up to the house. She was barefoot and wearing a t-shirt that went to her knees. Her hair was down, more wavy than usual, half of it in a bun on top of her head. She looked like an LA girl leaving one of those overpriced organic grocery stores, so effortlessly cool. I realized that Kale never told me why we were going to the Mendoza's house, or if it was to hang out with them, but I hoped it was just because. It felt surprisingly nice to have a friend's house to go to. Hey, babe. Gloria hugged me with both arms. A real hug. A hug that felt like friendship and trust and comfort.
I didn't think I would ever get used to that feeling. How are you? She gently pushed my shoulders to have direct eye contact with me. You look like hell. She frowned, brushing my hair away from my face. Beautiful hell, but hell nonetheless. I don't know how I am, I mean. I decided to not edit my response. I almost said, I'm totally fine, you? But Gloria had such a comforting vibe that I didn't feel the need to pretend around her, which was also a strange feeling. One I wished I would be used to by now, but which was slightly uncomfortable still. Understandable? Last night was fucking wild. I can't believe Phillips had the nerve to pull out a fucking gun.
Gloria.
Kale's voice came out as a warning. She rolled her eyes at him, clearly not fazed. What? That's what happened, and she was literally there. Stop babying her. She wrapped her arm around my shoulder and led me to the door. As we were about to step inside, she turned around to Kale behind us. By the way, Manny is on his second bottle, and the kids are at the neighbor's house playing, so now that you're here, you can take over babysitting my husband. Kale groaned, but didn't disagree. Mendoza was sitting on the couch when we walked in. Like Gloria had warned, he had a half-empty bottle of what looked like his usual tequila in his hand.
Happy fucking Tuesday, he shouted as we entered the room. Or is it Wednesday? Anyway, glad to see we're all alive today. Have a seat.
He was cheerful, obviously drunk as hell, but in a funny mood. A tiny voice in my head reminded me that it shouldn't be funny, but that didn't change the fact that it was.
Glad to see you're damaging your liver at 1 in the afternoon,
Kale said as he sat down next to him on the couch. I followed Gloria's lead and plopped down on the love seat. She moved closer to me and crossed her legs under her body. The television was on, a football game playing in the background with barely any sound. Kids' toys were scattered randomly around the room, and their house felt like a home, full of life. Cup rings stained the wooden part of the coffee table. Children's fingerprints dotted the glass center.
I'm nothing but consistent.
Mendoza leaned up to put his elbows on his knees. He was wearing his ACUs.
Why aren't you with the company?
Kale asked. For a bunch of soldiers, sometimes I wondered when they worked.
I got the day off, thanks to your old man.
He pointed the bottle at me. What? I couldn't hide my surprise and discomfort at the mention of my father. I wondered how Mendoza could even stand to be around me, given how he felt about my dad. I was grateful that Kale had spared me most of the details of what exactly my dad had done, otherwise my guilt would keep me from being able to have a friendship with Gloria.
Your old man came and got me off work. Said I can take a mental health day or some shit. I was shocked too, a mental health day?
He laughed, taking a swig of the bottle. Kale's entire mood changed in a couple of breaths. I watched him try to keep his face still, but I could see the shift in his eyes, his jaw, his hands on his lap as my father was mentioned. I knew we were seconds away from Kale telling Mendoza to stop talking. On cue, he did just that. You can talk about my dad, it doesn't bother me, I told Mendoza, and looked at both him and Kale. I hate him too, so it's fine. I tried to smile, lighten the mood a little, but it came out awkwardly. I really needed to work on my social skills.